One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Just before I introduce my guest today, I'd like to give a special mention to former guest of the show, Earl Grey, who is the MUFON State Director for Southern California, a really lovely guy. And he's had a very rough week in hospital. He's in intensive care after his cancer diagnosis recently. All his family are with him, taking care of him. His daughter's just put an update online. Just to ask folks, whatever it is you do, whether it's prayer, good vibes, energy, whatever you want to call it, and whatever your persuasion is, pass it on Earl's way. And hopefully, Earl, you're as comfortable as can be at the minute, and you're back up and out of bed as soon as possible. So yeah, thoughts with Earl, folks. And I'm sure if he gets a chance, he'll be listening to this show down the line. And my guest returning today is a journalist, professor, public speaker and creator of the Essential Ask a Paul, where I'm signed up as a paid member. So thank you very much, Matt, to get my Washington-based UFO news. But we can discuss that as we go along. Welcome back, Matt Laszlo.
Hey, thanks for having me, brother.
Very good to have you back on, Matt. Lots to get into. Is it a break just now or something? Like, is it a couple of weeks where all the politicians have some much needed time off? Is that right?
Well, so as you mentioned, I'm a congressional reporter. I've been covering Congress about 20 years now. And the one thing I do know about Congress, and I don't know much about Washington these days, because who knows what's happening in Washington these days. It changes every second, 5 times a day. But I do know that your Congress is bipartisanly lazy as a mother. They're terrible. They just gave themselves 2 weeks off for Easter, even though at least a quarter of them are atheists. They don't believe in Easter, but they believe in giving themselves time off.
Sounds about right. So probably a good time to kind of catch up on where everything is. You've mentioned, Matt, there, your background. We've had you on the show now a couple of times. But for anyone listening for the first time, what's the kind of Cliff Notes version of who is Matt Laszlo?
Yeah, so I've been covering Congress for all the fun outlets for about 2 decades. Covered cannabis, drug policy for Playboy, Rolling Stone, Vice News Tonight. But then also have been a Wired magazine contributor covering tech policy, all that, which is actually how I came into the UAP issue from Wired coverage. But then I also am a professor on the side, teacher at Johns Hopkins, Boston University. Mostly it's like poli-sci, but like a look at how the media and politicians have or have failed to adapt to new mediums over time. But kind of looking at how rhetoric has or has not adapted to reality over time. And that's why I love coming back on this show, because who knows what is or what isn't reality in today's Washington?
Yes, today's Washington tends to shape what's happening around the globe more than ever, it seems. And
we apologize. Most of us Americans apologize on behalf of...
Listen, I repeat this ad nauseum. I'm not a big politics guy, even though it affects us all. The UK can't talk right now. We're an absolute bin fire of a country as well. So things just aren't particularly great in most places around the world. If you are in a country that is particularly thriving at the minute, get in touch and let us know where you are. And perhaps you'll
let us know where to move.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of us are struggling right now in all kinds of shapes or forms. So But that's your background, Matt. So let's get right into it, because you're really good to have on for what's going on. You've got your finger on the pulse. You are the boots on the ground guy in Washington. You are literally, and I've said this before, if you've not heard Matt, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong or if this in any way diminishes what you do, you literally hound politicians of all levels. You run next to them from office to office, from train to taxi. You jump in the back of their cars with them just to get a quote, a clip, an audio piece, a snippet, a meeting, something with them. And that's what can get news out within minutes or hours of it happening. You literally hang about outside of skiffs and rooms to go, you know, what's just been said, and throw a microphone in their face. Is that fair?
Oh, it's fair as hell. One of our job titles as the Congressional Press Corps, which is more illustrious than the White House Press Corps, because the Constitution says Congress is number one, even though everyone likes the shiny object of the White House. But yeah, at the Capitol, we get a little dirty. We get, like the joke is our job is hurry up and wait, because sometimes you'll just be sitting outside of the skiff for 1, 2, 3 hours, and then boom, that one person walks out who's not willing to talk on the record because it is a classified setting, but who, like, you know, gives us those little Easter eggs that we then go on the hunt for. So yeah, I'm a professional stalker, for better and for worse.
So give us the temperature right now in DC on the UAP issue, because it was last year you were back on. So much has changed, and I'm going to get to the new administration. If it comes up, it comes up. But what is the water like right now?
Well, so I'm actually, and this is where I tend to be honest, unlike some of my colleagues in the media who drunk too much Kool-Aid, and unlike my sources, the politicians who, you know, I also say I interview 535 liars for a living. So I'm bipartisanly don't trust them all. But that's why I keep pulling the threads. And honestly, up until last week, up until the end of March, I was like, wow, this is interesting. It kind of feels like, and this is still a little bit true, they can prove us wrong, but this whole Congress, which just started in January, it's kind of felt like the UAP caucus just kind of dissolved. Now, on paper, they haven't dissolved. On paper, the UAP caucus is still there, but you had kind of most of the energy that was the UAP caucus as we knew it last year kind of just evolve into this new secrets task force. And if you're not familiar, good on you. But the new secrets task force is chaired by UAP caucus co-chair Anna Paulina Luna, but instead of just looking at UAP's task force on secrets, they have JFK, his assassination as a part of their portfolio, MLK, Martin Luther King Jr., his assassination. They also have the Jeffrey Epstein, you know, the fucking, pardon my French, but the pedo, you know, sicko. They've got his stuff on their plate. I believe 9/11 and then the origins of COVID as well. And so this task force, and I didn't know this till the start of this Congress, every task force is just given a 6-month window. Now, it might be renewed, but they've had 6 months, you know, from the start of this Congress in January to, you know, focus on all these issues. And first month, second month, third month, like, I think we're about to drop, so I'm the founder of askapoll.com and askapolluaps.com. I think we're about to drop an interview with Nancy Mace, but like the UAP caucus still hasn't met this Congress. Or no, actually with the other co-chair, Tim Burchett. I think he confirmed that to us. And so I was like, wait, this new secrets task force, it's felt like they were just kind of getting burned by congressional leadership. Like, mm-hmm. It's felt to me like Republican leaders are like, all right, we don't want to give time or resources to this committee or to this non-committee, to this caucus. how can we like undermine them? So like, oh, we'll give them a task force. And instead of making them focus just on this one huge issue, they're going to have to focus on every secret conspiracy, for lack of a better term, under the sun. And so, yeah, I came in very dubious. That's what I'm paid to be, just skeptical.
Yeah.
But then, boom, end of last month, we had Congressman Eric Burleson, who's a member of the UAP caucus. He goes and he hires David Grush. You probably remember that name. But yeah, the UFO whistleblower who testified in July 2023 before the House Oversight Committee in that public hearing. And since that hearing, the members of the UAP caucus have not been allowed or haven't been able, just it hasn't worked out to get him in a skip. Well, now Eric Burleson hired Grush as his personal congressional staffer, part-time staffer. And from what him and Congresswoman Luna, Chair Luna, are telling me is they feel like it's really been a game changer that he, even though he's only been technically on staff for 2 weeks or so now, he got brought on officially on April 1st, but first week was a bunch of administrative BS he had to do, you know, like all these different policies, no eating over here, no drinking over here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Not really, but, you know. And so...
Yeah.
And so he had to go back through like preschool training for like working for the government. And he's like, yeah, I got this. Well, so they finally have had some meetings. And it seems like what they're telling me, all systems go. Because what Burleson, Congressman Burleson says is it's just a game changer by its very nature. Now, they're still fighting to get him his clearance back. But even without that, Burleson and them say, like, he's on our staff, so he can just, like, you know, it's hard to, like, say what he can do, but it's like, yeah, you're not allowed to talk about classified info with non-classified folks, but that's your boss. And
sure,
he's got some level of classification because he's in Congress.
Walk back
that's
a step.
Happening.
I want to ask this question, Matt. Explain to me what a staffer is, because I'm sure for those particularly maybe outside the US, I've heard that term and I've learned a lot about US politics in the 5 years doing this podcast now, but not everything, but I know enough. And this term staffer for me, I always thought it was like a kind of dog's body, you know, if I was a congressman or woman and I've got a staffer, they're going and getting my coffee and whatnot. But then I hear that staffers get briefings and then pass that information on. So, oh, it's something more. So what is a staffer?
Well, so yeah, staffer, some might call it a congressional aide, and it depends on the office. And actually, because I'm a professor at Boston University, with my students, I was able to go into Senator Elizabeth Warren's office for a briefing from her staff. And this kind of blew my mind. The way Elizabeth Warren, who's, you know, a PhD, lover, hater, she's smart. And like the way she set up her DC office is that it's basically a think tank. And so like, she's got a bunch of people with PhDs on her staff. And even though, you know, again, Wired Magazine contributor, when it comes to like data privacy issues, where, you know, our governments through our iPhones or Androids or whatever, for us to sign that contract and like be able to use Instagram or TikTok or whatever, we have to sign our souls away. At least here in the US. There in the UK, you're able to opt out in the, you have to opt in. Here in the US, we have to opt out. And like, even though Elizabeth Warren is not on our judiciary committee, so she doesn't have like an actual dog in this fight, because it's such a big issue to her, she's got an antitrust lawyer on her staff. And so like when it comes to Congress, they can have staffers that are, yeah, underpaid, paid below minimum wage because Congress is abusive and all that. So they have their underlings who are their schedulers and blah, blah, blah. But they have a certain budget that they have to stay within. So some use more of that budget to hire like pristine people over here in this field. And I think like in Elizabeth Warren's case, I think she hires a few more top dog and dogette, PhDs or whatever. And then other staffers have to carry more burden, but then they also get paid a little bit more, it seems. Well, so with Eric Burleson putting on his staff, and I've read a lot of history, told you I'm a professor on the side. I've never seen this done. And I've actually been personally covering Congress for 19 years now. I've never seen this done where the government, Congress feels like they can't get the answers that they want. Mm-hmm. So they hire this person who worked on those programs as their staff, who supposedly knows them intimately. And that's where, and it's interesting because Burleson, again, he's got a certain amount of staff budget. I think it's a couple million a year, but they have to have offices back at home. They have to have, Usually if it's a bigger district, they'll have two or three offices. Well, so for Chet, Burleson, he agreed to hire Grush, and Grush is just brought in as a part-time employee. And so we don't know yet. We will, I guess, next month or next quarter. You can look on the site legistorm.com and find out how much he's actually getting paid. But from what we know, Mr. Grush is not in this for money. And, he's taking his new role where he's just working a day or whatever a week on paper for Congress. It seems because he's living in California, I believe, with his family, that he'll be coming out every once in a while to D.C. And when he comes, the hope is from the UAP caucus is that he's just going to be rattling the temple, letting the pigeons and the doves loose. It's a game changer just because, again, we haven't seen this before with Congress and seeing that the executive branch, the White House, that they've been playing this hardball throughout the last administration and for the past 70 years, people are really hoping that this can be a game changer where it kind of tilts things back to Congress, at least when it comes to knowledge, knowing what questions to ask, knowing where to go sniff stuff out.
Game changer. I was going to ask you, is this a game changer? But also, a lot of skeptical folks, and rightly so, being skeptical, are looking at what the UAP caucus group, Lunar, Burchett, Burleson, and the others involved have managed to accomplish over the last year or two, from the hearings and onwards. And it seems to be mixed reviews, mixed opinion. Skeptical folks wonder, is this a move to almost gain control of Grush? That it is easier to stifle or keep on a certain side of the fence if he's being paid and he's brought in?
So, yeah, and I feel that and I get that. I would say with this, my other feelings override that. And I don't trust Congress. I'm actually a little bit, I've read so much that I don't even trust myself or my colleagues, I think all of us should be rightfully dubious of today's media, especially here in the U.S. What? We're the media that got us the globe into the Iraq war over weapons of mass destruction that turns out did not exist. If anything, we own most of the world's weapons of mass destruction. And so, we all have a right. And we should be these days really questioning the media, especially the U.S. media. But this is one where it doesn't. And again, this is where I paused a little bit. Professor Wazlow pauses because I'm torn. Mm-hmm. From what it's felt like to me is, and this is based on what lawmakers have told me, there was, even though the first 2 months of the year, it's felt like UAP caucus was going after shinier objects with the JFK or Epstein files, all that. It seems like they actually were playing pretty interesting five-dimensional chess where, some people do doubt that these Republicans who are kind of the head of these efforts, Congresswoman Luna, Mr. Burchett, Mr. Burleson, you know, they're all fairly far right lawmakers. And so that makes them allies, like with President Trump, allies to varying degrees. Some, it seems like, can text him or can text his people and like get responses. Others, they just trust him. And so that's where, even though this issue is like stayed so nonpartisan, which has been very refreshing in DC, just the way this new Trump administration is coming out, just like, you know, Gatling guns, just blazing at allies, whether it's the UK, Scotland, et cetera. You just go across the globe, Canada, Mexico. And so like, there's this natural questioning of like, wait, this isn't exactly what Trump promised. When it comes to these UAP caucus folks, especially those from the far right, they tend to just have this innate belief that Trump is going to disclose all the files, whether it's JFK, Epstein, or UAPs. That is where we've seen this interesting tension that hasn't been here before, because you have all the Democrats and even more moderate Republicans being like, wait, you think Trump's going to do that? Like, we know he said something along those lines. And so that's where there is interesting tension right now. I don't know if anyone fully knows where it's going. And that's in part because Luna, Burleson, Burchett, they're leaning, they went from like leaning on the White House to now leaning on Grush. And so to me, it hasn't felt like they're leaning on Grush to like quiet him and bring him in. Like, I've been outside the Skip briefings for the past, what, 2.5 years. And you just had these lawmakers coming out so frustrated, being like, these people, how dare they not know that we were going to ask about this? Because Grush just testified about this. I'm thinking back to 2023. Mm-hmm. Grush testified in July. I think their first Skip briefing that year was like a couple months after that. And all those lawmakers just came out so frustrated, being like, how dare they? Like, there was anger. And they were like, these people, they should have known that we were going to ask at least these questions. So they didn't. Like, the meeting kind of ended abruptly, or it ended, you know, after not much happened. All the lawmakers came out really ticked off. Well, then it was interesting because, and I think that one, there was only like 5 or 6, maybe 7 lawmakers. The next, and it was only us at askapoll.com and our friends at News Nation, I believe, Joe Cahill and them. Mm-hmm. So the next briefing, boom, you have 5-6 times as many media outlets. You got Axios, you got Fox News, you got CNN. Because whoever in the executive branch kind of effed with those lawmakers and messed with them, boom, then you had 3-4 times as many lawmakers. The next briefing, AOC, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she was in there. And so like, we've kind of seen in real time, old playbook from the executive branch. And like, when I say executive branch, don't think of it partisan per se. It's not just right now, it's Donald Trump. Back then it was Biden. Again, the UAP issue has really superseded all that BS partisanship. Yeah. And so that's where, yes, I'm still, to get back to your actual question, yes, I'm still skeptical of what any lawmaker tells me. But seeing this one play out, it seems like Grush is kind of the silver bullet. And we don't know if he is going to be that silver bullet. Yeah. It might be a silver spray painted bullet at this point. But they're kind of hoping that he's going to be the game changer to kind of show the executive branch, like, hey, we actually know what you're holding in your hands. You know, we know some of the decks or some of the cards in your hand. And so we'll see. All that to say, I don't think we really know how this is going to pan out. Again, you kind of have this hope with those members on the right that Trump is just going to innately release all this stuff. Even those members on the right are kind of now like, wait, he hasn't released it yet. And they're kind of looking around. And I think that's where Grush is there. At least some of them, their good faith effort to pry the administration, you know, into their camp a little further. I'm watching and I'm waiting. They haven't done much yet.
Yeah, we all are. And you've had this quite right. You've said no matter what side of the fence you fall on in the States, you've had this 3 months of chaos where when the new administration's come in, I don't think many folks foresaw the reaction and the shockwaves to quite go as far and as long as they have. And it seems every couple of days something else happens. So understandably, I can appreciate why the UFO UAP subject has fallen down the ladder in some respects, and that it wouldn't be, you know, when you're teetering on the brink of, you know, economic war, let alone physical wars, potentially another, you know, if the things escalate, you hope it doesn't go that far. There's no one sitting going, yeah, but what about the UFO files? Let's release those. So hopefully as things begin to calm and the shockwaves die down, things settle around the globe, the UFO topic comes back into it. You mentioned perhaps then Grush is that little bit of chaos into the UFO topic that opens things up in the way we've perhaps needed. Allegedly, this is fact. You have said it, and I know it's fact. There's a skiff scheduled with Grush, Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and Arrow, I believe. Is that for the end of April, or have I made that date up?
No. So as far as I know, and I've been a little unplugged the start of this week, Congress is going on, and I had jury duty yesterday. So I'm only like, then I took a personal day Monday, just in case I got stuck on a jury. Yeah. So I've been a little unplugged these past 4 days. And in Washington, especially Trump's Washington, a lot can happen in 4 days.
4 days won't change in yet.
I was going to say, let alone 4 hours.
Yeah.
And so I don't... So like last I talked to Luna, the chair of the Secret Task Force, last I talked to her and them, she gave me a timeline 3-4 weeks ago that said April. When I last asked her, and you can listen to that interview and my latest with her at askapolluaps.com. And I'm actually curious what your viewers think of it, because she was very definitive at the start of March saying April, blah, blah, blah. And it might have even been the end of February. But I think it was mid-March, but she's like, boom, April. That was before Grush. They really made that attempt for Grush. And that was before Grush actually got hired. So I'm kind of like, Congress is now in this 2-week recess. They come back April 28th, which is the first week of March. The week ends March 2nd. It could happen then. Again, according to what I know, they haven't officially announced that yet. I could see that getting moved to early May or somewhere in there. Well, and part of that's just because the request isn't just for Grush. The request is for Grush, Elizondo, as you said, Mellon, and then Arrow.
Kozlowski.
You know, the new head of Arrow. And so what they're trying to do there, what I would tell people in the community, like, it doesn't seem like, well, now I'm always playing devil's advocate with myself.
Yeah.
Because that briefing is going to be in a skiff, a lot of, you know, our followers at askapol.com have been like, okay, so they're going to go at this brilliant meeting and they're not going to be able to tell any of us about it at all. And I'm like, fair. So, you know, like, what progress does that bring? Well, according to the community, And when it comes to transparency and disclosure, what does that bring? Nothing. But I think that's where they're kind of taking, you know, they're slowly pulling the string. And I think their big hope in that meeting is where someone in that room gets debunked. And I think those members are thinking, they're hoping with Elizondo, Grush, and Mellon sitting across from Arrow, that Arrow, as we know it, is going to have to, like, is going to be put on the spot and have to answer questions that they haven't been forthcoming with Congress. But who knows what will actually happen? And so, like, when it comes to a date, I still haven't heard that fully confirmed. Let me know if you've heard otherwise, but it seems like they're on this new fact-finding mission where they feel like they have, you know,
Tomahawks. Yeah, my end of April is going off of the previous interview you had with Luna a month or so ago where it was that. But like you say,
she said this month. She said April, but again, it was before they hired Grush. And so I think Grush, from what they're telling me, is he's such a game changer that I could see them. Well, and here's a little tidbit that Burleson gave me. So because Burleson, Congressman Burleson, hired Grush on his personal staff, I guess there's a rule in Congress where you can't be a staffer for this lawmaker, Burleson, but do all your work for this committee or this caucus. And it just kind of makes sense that, like, no, you have your own staff, they have their own staff. Because you could see back in the day where a strong majority leader or whatever would really lean on that lawmaker, that freshman lawmaker. Hey, I need your vote. You're meaningless and powerless, but hey, to get your vote or, like, to even bring you on board, I'm going to need two of your staff members, you know, so I'm going to accumulate that. And so, like, there's just a rule, and it kind of makes sense on one level. I think what lawmakers are feeling out is, because again, this is unprecedented, it's like, what does it mean to have an actual UFO whistleblower on your staff? And what Burleson said, and this might be why the April meeting might get delayed, the Pentagon hasn't been forthcoming. And I guess they're going through the Pentagon to get his clearance back. Mm-hmm. And so right now, David Grush doesn't have a clearance. He still knows all that stuff. But will he get arrested if he speaks it to his boss, who's also a member of Congress, or who is a member of Congress, and who's got a certain level of security clearance? And so I think everyone's kind of learning as they go. I will say July, they'll have July 4th, you know, Independence Day. Sorry, Britain. Love y'all, but your red coast lost.
I just think Independence Day, Bill Pullman, Will Smith, aliens, that's my Independence Day. So I'm over the red coat stuff, yeah.
I watch that Will Smith Independence Day annually because it's an amazing fucking film. Pardon my French. So that's going to be a natural deadline for lawmakers because, like, 2-3 weeks after July 4th recess, is boom, they're gone all of August. And so I think it'll happen sooner than that. Or I know this. Lawmakers are telling me they want it way sooner. They want it in April. They want it yesterday, .. It seems like because they're still not negotiating, because they're still waiting for Grush to get his clearance back, that might naturally have to be delayed until later in May. But the lawmakers are definitely itching for it. And it seems, from what I'm told, that Grush and the others are game on.
But two things then for that. If you go to that July timeframe, is that not the 6 months up for the task force, for the whole declassification task force? Because that's about that. But also, just before I forget, you'll know how this works better than me, and I may be thinking of this too simplistically, You say Grush has got all this up here. We want to know what's in here, right? Grush can't come out and say that, not publicly. And technically, he can't say that to Burleson and co around a table. But if you're Burleson and a couple of the other staff guys and girls, and you're in Burleson's office and you're chatting UFO stuff, and you're trying to get somewhere forward, Grush can't tell you what he knows, but surely he can go, no, that's that. I wouldn't say that's right. Or it can kind of nudge you in that direction. We've all known something we can't repeat. And I'm not talking UFO stuff here, whether it's like at work, or there's a promotion coming up, or, you know, it's someone's birthday, but you're trying to plan around them being, you can.
Or back in elementary school, she's got a crush on him. And,
yeah.
You know, like.
And you're trying to speak around this stuff. And that's what I'm thinking. So then can Grush be the guy who sits and goes, oh, you might mention, you know, it could be this, or we're looking at this, and then, or it could be this. And the third one, Grush goes, oh, yep, that sounds interesting. That's the one to go with.
Dude, so to answer your second question first, because this is something I pushed Burleson on a little bit, and then he didn't bristle. He just naturally was like, I'm not going to talk about that. Which is actually where my last interview with him kind of ended abruptly at askapoll.com, just because I kept that. I rarely do this, but I think, you know, let me keep that last part just internal. So instead of my usual, hey, goodbye, Congressman, I just kept that last snippet because he laughed so awkwardly. And like, no, tell me, he didn't laugh. And that made it so awkward that I was like, wait, this doesn't even translate to like me interviewing. Like, he was so awkward and so tied in a knot that I was like, wait, I didn't understand what he was saying. And then it took me a day or two and I was like, oh, I made him nervous.
Yeah.
And that's where, and this is where lawmakers are my sources. And I, you know, you got to take care of that, whatever we want to say, it's a maybe or maybe cap. Like, you got to take care of that baby. Otherwise, you're not going to get any more milk from it. You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And like, what I specifically asked Burleson, and this hasn't been public yet, it's not much there, but I was like, wait, so if like you come in the morning and on the top of your fax machine, because yeah, lawmakers use fax machines still, but like on the top of your fax machine is this note from someone, maybe from Mr. Grush, that says, hey, you should look into this. Will you do it? And all Burleson's reaction was, and then he bolted. And I was like, wait, that was rude. And then I was like, oh no, that wasn't rude. Like,
yep,
you're avoiding a basic, but also a basic question that lawmakers haven't really wanted have to answer. And it seems to me like they still don't, which is, the feeling is they are, at least in their minds, pushing this envelope as far as it can go. And I think that's why they're ending up in a skiff. Because as much as Grush can tell them these things, like, hell, us in the Washington, D.C. press corps, you know, and any other reporter who covers politics globally, you're in the same camp where sometimes you get really good information, you know, and I'm a media professor. Like, the rule is not, like, there's no rules for anything, basically. But with journalism, those rules are verbal agreements. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk to a classified source or whatever, like, that takes on a little bit of a different level. But when I'm just talking to a member of Congress and they say, hey, off the record, will you agree to that? I sometimes, as we put at askapolluaps.com, I once told the chair of the Senate Intel Committee, No, well, let's stay on the record. And like, even if Warner in that case was like, hey, no, I really want this off the record, that's up to me. So whether I publish that or not is up to me. What I have to weigh is, okay, how good is this source? Oh, he's been excellent over the years. Can I afford to burn this bridge? And usually the answer is no, you know?
Yeah.
To me, the only time I ever been even tempted to break that bond is when someone lies. And when if someone lies and I've, you know, got it recorded or I've got the notes, I'm like, okay, you're not someone who should be in this space. You're a fucking liar and I can prove it. So boom. So when it comes to someone like Rush, again, this is where, and I apologize to everyone that I'm like speaking so long-windedly. This is a fascinating conversation that I just don't have the answers to, but that's where us at Askapol, we keep pushing and pushing and prodding. And I think this is an interesting case where lawmakers themselves are kind of doing the same thing. And so, at least for me, journalistically, I treat my sources who aren't elected officials to a very different standard than I treat my lawmaker or my sources who are elected officials. If you're a member of Congress, I want to hold you to the highest effing standard, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm not giving you an easy out. And like, I used to be a Vice and Vice News correspondent. We had a perfect and beautiful rule. The basic rule was we don't accept off the record interviews. Cause like, if you're say Congress and say ex congressperson wants to go off the record with me, cool. I'll hear all your thoughts off the record, but then I'll say, okay, I need that on the record. And they'll be like, no, that should come from, you know, just anonymous. If you're an elected official and you won't stand by your own fucking thoughts, that those aren't your thoughts. Those are your weapons. And I will not allow myself to be the bow that, like, you know, my editor pulls the string, but like, you're the arrow, but oh, you're nameless arrow. Like, no, no, no. To me, yeah, I want to know what you have to tell me, but you don't have no worth to me if you just want to sit there in secret and like throw these barbs. Now, when it comes to these issues, this is a lot different. And so when it comes to these issues, and especially with someone like Grush in the mix, again, I think lawmakers are kind of filling this out in real time. They're also, these lawmakers, feeling out the executive branch in real time because they want to know, was the Pentagon reacting to this? Not going to react. How are they reacting to this in real time? And so, kind of back to one of your earlier questions, since Grush really became, since early March, Burleson had told me for more than a year at Askapol that he wanted Grush. Once it became like, oh, wait, you got him, it's just a different conversation altogether because lawmakers, again, they're trying to figure out what this means for them and how to protect him, even though they don't want to have to do that because they just want him to have his clearance back. And I think that's kind of going to actually be the first real test of this relationship with the new Secrets Task Force / UAP Caucus and the Trump administration. Because the question is, hey, are you going to even allow Grush to tell what he knows on the record, Arrow and these members of Congress? Right now, we don't have an answer for that. And like, that's a big deal.
Here's a test of your memory, Matt. Do you remember the first part of that question I asked you?
I got it right there.
There you go. You've got.
I don't trust my memory. I smoke way too much weed. This is why I write everything down.
I've got my notepad of little jotted down bits as well. But yeah, so on that, for a refresher for even the listener, like, it was that task force had 6 months, which doesn't seem a lot of time. I spoke to lawyer Danny Sheehan. You'll know Danny. He had actually mentioned, as well as that list of everything you reeled off, you know, JFK, Epstein, Martin Luther King, 9/11, COVID. He said also the Osama bin Laden killing was apparently being added into that, and something else as well. Yeah. And it was just like you kind of alluded to it. Let's just lump in every fucking conspiracy, pardon my French, into this 6 month task force, which, what, we're 2 months in, and we've had some influence get handed the Epstein client list, which was heavily redacted / missing. And we also got the JFK stuff, which didn't really go anywhere. So we're kind of 0-2.
So yes and no. And this is where I encourage reporters like myself not to think too much, but for me as a professor, I just naturally think. I'm curious, because now seeing that the Secrets Task Force, at least one of the members, Burleson, has now hired Grush, I wonder if some of the quiet at the beginning of this Congress I wonder whether some of the quiet around the UAP topic wasn't because the focus was Grush. And like, if they made the focus Grush back in January, I could see a lot more voices from the executive branch. And again, executive branch, that's aside from the current president, who's Trump. That's aside from the past president, who's Biden. Because remember, a lot of the thinking is that you have, I hate the term deep state, it's worthless, blah, blah, blah. But you do have you do have a government that stays on after a president has their 4 years or their 8 years. And so that's where I still don't know how much these folks in the UAP caucus know, or how much they're kind of flying blind. Because again, they got so stilted. Like, it's got everything upended for the past, ever since Grush testified in 2023. So it feels like, it's just 2 years. No, that's been ages. Everyone in your community kind of knows that. Like, that's been 2 years. It's felt like decades. Because when Grush testified, it felt like he was onto something. And that's where we had Democrats, far left progressives, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She came out of that hearing being like, hey, I need to hear from Grush in a skiff. Same with Congressman Jamie Raskin, who was the lead on one of Donald Trump's 2 impeachments in the Senate, And so, but they're lined up with these far right folks. And so that's where I'm still waiting to see all those partisan and .. elements come together, like AOC, Raskin, with Burchett and Burleson. Like, again, when they were coming out of that hearing in 2023, they were super unified and super focused on one thing. We need to hear from Grush in a skiff. Now, since 2023, there's been at least one bloody election, at least 2 bloody elections, which is what we saw in Wisconsin or whatever. And so we've seen Washington pitch itself and like get even more hardened in its partisan ways, left and right. Hiring of Grush, I think, does kind of cut through that. And that's where I'm very curious to press some of these other lawmakers, because now Jamie Raskin, he's the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. So, he's a lot more powerful. And so you've kind of seen that. And that's where I want to go ask these people their thinking on this, because I think the more of those folks who are outside of, pardon me, those folks who aren't on the UAP caucus, I think they have the real power to move leaders, whether those leaders are the Speaker of the House, whether those leaders are in the White House, whether they're in the Senate. Like, if we see these folks get more unified and stay very focused, I think they're unstoppable, especially because they come from such disparate parts of the party. If they allow the partisan and the hyper-partisan stuff to keep seeping in, which slowly been seeping in, then I think they really kind of neuter themselves. And so that's where the 6-month timeline on the task force is important. If it's important, it also might be meaningless. And like, if they unify and, dare I say, if that secrets task force, you know, especially starts to land, not even punches, but if they just start, you know, make strides, especially with the American people, well, boom, that's something that Speaker Johnson and then Oversight Committee Chair James Comer can't deny. Right now, we haven't quite seen that. And I'm kind of curious whether Luna and them purposely didn't start with UAPs for a reason. And it might have been that they thought Grush was coming in and they were going for that hardcore. If that's the case, that's your question. Well, hey, y'all lost a good 2 months doing that. And now we're, what, 4th month into this administration? Like, hey, we'll see. Their thinking also might be that, oh, they can always come to the UAP caucus even after the secrets task force is done. And so, like, I don't know. And, like, it's actually been frustrating for me on the ground at the Capitol this whole year. For what? More than 100 days now, it's felt like. I've been asking these questions. I haven't been getting good answers. And then, like, Grush was hired. So it's like, okay, maybe you all were waiting for that. We don't quite know that yet, but, and we haven't quite seen them hit a ball out of the park, for lack of a better term, or we haven't seen them get a goal yet. And so that's why I'm like, okay, will they have wearing the UAP stuff in order for leadership to give them an extension on life past that 6-month window? Because maybe if they led with the UFO stuff, leadership would have never given them, or, you know, leadership might just cut off their committee after 6 months or their task force after 6 months anyway. And so I don't know what they know fully, but especially now with this crunch time coming, that's right. I wish they were in town, because these are the questions I have for them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they have answers for any of us.
Just before we run out of time, and I've got a couple of listener questions to finish up on, there was a comment made today. Have you seen this? By the White House Office of Science and Technology, the policy director, Michael Kratsios, or Kratsios?
You said it perfectly one of those times.
Yeah, okay, one of them, yeah, I think. I got the Michael right. He said that the US has technology that, to quote him, can manipulate time and space. So the actual sentence was, our technologies permit us to manipulate time and space. They leave distance annihilated. That's quite a comment to come out with, and it's one that people have really picked up on. Just to get your take on that.
Well, I was going to say, what? Did the Trump administration finally buy TikTok? Because sometimes TikTok feels like it traverses time and space. Bad joke. But, no, that's one where I've got to, like, look into it further.
Yeah.
And this is, like, kind of the beauty of Askapol. Anyone out there, I'm going to do my plug for askapol.com early. Send us your thoughts. I mean, because so many of you, pardon me, 80, 90% of you are more well-read than Congress on any of these UAP topics, just hands down. And so also the media is not trusted. So when I get a question from you all and I take that to a lawmaker, I love it because I kind of recede into the distance and there's a power that you and your voice brings that me and the failed media or whatever you want to call us, like we just don't have that clout anymore. And it's kind of this beautiful brilliance in taking myself out of the equation. And I think that's also where it comes into like my thinking and our thinking. And I, throughout this interview, pardon me, of course, we were boring when I was like paused in thought because I'm so curious and I'm also so stymied by the hyper-partisanship where I don't know certain things, but I have hunches, but then I'm like, wait, are they giving me that hunch because they want me to like go after these people over here, blah, blah, blah. And so all the help from you all in letting me know what's BS, what's not, what's an important question, what's not, really does make a huge difference. And you'll hear it in our interviews on Ask a Poll. With this one, give me some popcorn. Like, I'm like, okay. Because I think that's what we haven't quite seen yet in this Congress. And I remember last Congress, who's expecting it? But boom, that's when David Grush, you know, dropped his bombshell on all of us. When it comes to Barber and what he said, that landed like a cricket at the start of this Congress. And like, I still haven't met a lawmaker. Burleson, I guess, has reached out to Barber after he dropped his claims. But this Congress hasn't had that jolt. And I feel like David Grush gave a huge jolt to the last Congress. This Congress is like wavering or like sharpening their daggers for other fights.
Hold that thought, Matt, right? Hold that thought because it's interesting. I'll give you one listener question to finish off because a few of them you've mentioned or you've touched on in what you've answered. So folks, you'll hear those. Matt asked, what did you, this is another Matt, by the way, you've not sent in a question.
I was going to say, terrible name, bro.
Yes.
But gift, you know, of God? I'm but only gift of God here, bro.
You're in the Discord chat, so well done, Matt. He said, what did you think about Jake Barber's claim that senators felt like they needed protection from gatekeepers when he came to them for help? They asked him to keep them safe. Have you picked up on that kind of feeling around the whole Jake Barber situation? Or like you say, was it flat?
Here's the interesting thing. And like, so I could actually see some senators feeling that like, oh, I need protection. There's been a lot of, let me rephrase it. There's been handful of voices in this community that have been very targeted. Those voices who are not representative of the whole have been heard by many lawmakers' offices on Capitol Hill. And I'm still exploring this when it comes to HPSCI or the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Because guess what? The past 2 years, under then Chair Mike Turner, I almost said the wrong name, but under then Chair Mike Turner, Jim Himes wouldn't say a thing. He just told me, and I've covered Jim Himes for since before he came to Congress. I've known him, you know. I covered him for local Connecticut stations. He doesn't strike me as someone who will lie to my face. And I've had that proven out in my reporting on him over the years, in decades. I think as of what I, from what I know right now, it seems like Himes was under orders to lie to us the past couple of years. It kind of feels, and you tell me how you read this, but go to our last interview at askapolluap.com with Jim Himes, where Jim Himes tells me, because he knows me. Well, first off, he says he's one of the greatest rock songs of all time. This beautiful, sorry, I got on a tangent, but to me, it's amazing. Himes went from literally being, telling us that no, he had no idea what was happening. No, pardon me. The song is The Zombies by Cranberries. It's on our site, askapolluap.com. But Himes, when he came up to me last time, he goes, hey. And he starts talking about this song, The Zombies, which I guess was stuck in his head. And I was like, wait. This is Himes being chummy with me again. Himes hasn't been chummy with me in a couple years. Well, what's the only thing that's really changed? Mike Turner's no longer the head of the Intel Committee in the House.
Yeah.
Well, so right after we get through Himes and me chatting about music, which I used to cover entertainment, so yeah. I always say I know how to deal with asshole politicians because I know how to deal with asshole musicians, which is very true. But so Himes, he then proceeds to tell us that, oh yeah, he goes, this is me reading him exactly on David Grush. No, David Grush, he was pretty high profile. And you know, he says, I'm not always happy about it, but the UAP folks are always in my DM. So he never really recognized or never really was public about like, oh, he's listening to you all in this community. Well, he has. What he tells us up top is literally that he's looked into and like Himes, he kind of leans on Arrow, like many lawmakers do, because they kind of set up Arrow to do their thinking for them. And so with Himes, he's like, and he wouldn't say this last year and the year before, but now post-Turner, he's like, oh yeah, I've looked into all this, you know, and I believe by that he means he's talked to the Sean Kirkpatrick, the new head of Arrow, which everyone in the community is like, that doesn't count. Like, those are biased folks. They're set up by Congress. And so that's where you're kind of seeing this interesting change where Jim Himes, for the past 10 interviews I've done with him on this topic, he was like, no, there's no there. We're not even looking into it. Well, now, in our latest interview, he's like, actually, and I haven't called him on it. He didn't recant what he told me in the past 9 interviews, but now he's like, no, Grush is on my radar. He's been on my radar. And he's like, there's no there. And that's the mind-blowing part is everything before he says what we expect him to say. We expect him to say there's no there. We didn't expect him to take Grush seriously, just based on what he's told us. And so now we've seen this change with him. And that's where I'm curious. Those little parts where we're seeing these little changes are kind of seismic. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you start to see a landslide, how do you know a landslide's coming? It's the little pebbles that start falling. And once those little pebbles start falling, hey, watch out. Because there's some big rocks that are coming down after it. And that's where it's very curious. And I don't even think the UAP caucus fully knows, but again, everyone, this is a new Congress. We're only 4 months in But what UAP caucus members are saying is this is an exciting time because they're now, they've got crush, they're empowered. And like, if they're showing me evidence of that, it's Jim Himes, you know, the top Democrat on the House Select Intelligence Committee. He wouldn't even admit this issue existed this time last year, let alone in the fall,
yeah,
where he said, no, this issue doesn't exist in our committee. Well, now that Turner's gone, then tell me if it had to do with something else. But now he's like, no, this issue exists. I've devoted time to it. It's important. And it's like, wait, that's a sea change. And so like, I know everyone hates to hear it. And that y'all are dubious of Congress and government, but like, don't forget, it took Democrats in the U.S. more than 100 years on an issue they care so much about, universal health care. It took them more than 100 years to fall just shy of universal health care under Obamacare. Like, it was the first time they got it, and boom, they tackled it, and they failed. Like, they're still mostly universal health care, but it's, you know, it's shy of their goal. So in the U.S., it sometimes takes you 100 years of movement to fall just short of your goals. And that's why we've got one of the best and one of the worst constitutions ever written on this planet.
And you know what? I think you put it really well when you mentioned those pebbles falling in. Not everyone notices or sees the pebbles first. Usually it's when you get the landslide, and perhaps that's what a lot of the, not just the UFO community, but the general public perhaps are guilty of with this topic. No one's really looking for the pebbles outside of a few, and maybe those are the ones shouting, something's coming, something's coming. It's when you see the rush of fucking rocks and mud coming down that you go, shit, we have to do something, and perhaps we're on the cusp of that, Matt, just now. But listen, we've run out of time anyway. You've been really good. You've mentioned a few times, I think you've mentioned the site once or twice, Matt, but do you want to just plug again? How can folks follow you and, of course, support you in the short, medium, and long term?
See, I had to keep you on your toes, brother.
Yeah.
But no, askapolluaps.com. You can also find us on social media with askapolluaps. Keep your questions coming. Like, we're literally only as strong as our community, and you all send us the best questions, the best shade. When I'm worthy of that shade. So yeah, keep keeping me honest, and yeah, find us at askapolluaps.com.
I genuinely am a member, and I get Matt's emails, and along with a few other newsletters, blogs, and emails, I find them very useful for what I do and what I put into the show. So I like to make sure that I support back people who are doing the kind of hard work that allows people like me to pass on messages and create my own opinion or curate my own opinion as well. So Matt, again, thank you for me very much for what you do.
Thank you, brother. Anytime.
Hi, everyone. If you listen to the podcast on an Apple device, you can support directly by going on to Apple Podcasts and clicking the subscribe button. And for less than the price of a coffee per month, you can get early access to episodes in full, and no adverts or sponsorships like this one you're hearing now. It also supports directly to me at the podcast, so thank you very much. Also, don't forget to go and leave the podcast on Apple a 5-star review, and make sure you click the follow button too. Thanks.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.com. KOSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to KOSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to KOSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at KOSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to KOSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to KOSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at KOSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to KOSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to KOSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at KOSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to KOSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to KOSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at KOSI.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to KOSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to KOSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at KOSI.org.